How are you enjoying your stay so far?
Well, yeah, we got in this morning, and everybody's been very pleasant to us so far.
You had an incident on the bus coming up.
Yeah, just a minor thing, but we were not really awake to know what it was all about. Next thing we know, we're here, so here we are now, and we're ready to go.
Tell us just briefly, well, what did you do before you became a public personality?
Yeah, I was a computer operator.
Is that what you, through school?
No, it's that, well, through school in the sense that I left school. I went to school in Liverpool for 2 years, and when I left school, there was very little work. And it wasn't so much a question of choosing your job as taking the first job you got, because there was like 1 million people unemployed in England, which, if you're aware of the size of England, is quite a lot of people. So you pretty much had to take what you could get, you know. I just happened to get a job as a computer operator. I didn't really mind what I got so long as I got paid.
Anything. How did you get from there to on stage?
With great difficulty. It took me a few years to get anybody to take what I was doing seriously or to make any kind of offer. I went around pretty much all the companies.
Had you been playing in bands around?
I did this and that, yeah. Nothing kind of outstanding. It was always a question of trying to get tapes done. And it's the same old story, which I'm sure, you know, any musicians that are listening that are trying to get started are familiar with, you know, not having enough money to make your gigs good enough because the equipment that you're using is not any good, not ever having enough money to make a decent tape to represent, you know, what you're trying to do, you know. It's a story which I'm sure has been repeated many times, you know.
Well, you've been fairly fortunate that you...
That's the other thing. I just kind of appeared from nowhere, and therefore there are other... I've had some comments in articles, you know, which have been kind of resentful because I didn't make a couple of duff albums on another label with some loser band.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've just made one record and it's doing okay, people imagine that you haven't. You've just kind of picked up the guitar last week. But, you know, I've had plenty of time when I've really felt that I was never going to get anywhere and I was about to quit, you know.
You're very serious about what you do, aren't you?
Well, I'm very serious about, you know, I'm quite resentful about the fact that I've spent so much time trying to convince people, and I haven't got much time for people to come around now trying to be my friend from companies that previously turned me down just because of their lack of imagination.
How long had you shopped? How did you get connected with Stiff? Are those like personal friends? Or
I was acquainted with one of the directors of Stiff from previous time, and Nick Lowe, the producer of the album. But Stiff appeared at the time when I was just about giving up hope. I'd just actually been rejected by CBS in England, which is rather ironic because I'm now in Columbia in America. But that was just about the last company that I'd been to, you know. And Stiff actually appeared at that point, so it wasn't a question of Stiff kind of noticed me. They happened to coincide exactly with the time where I ran out of other companies.
Was that about a year ago?
It was a little more now. It was about a year and a half ago. I was, in fact, the first person signed to Stiff from a tape. I was the first person, you know, that was kind of auditioned.
Was Less Than Zero the tape? What tape?
No, the B-side of Less Than Zero in England, which is Radio Sweetheart, which is not on an album, was the original song which we chose.
From that Stiff anthology.
Yeah, and from then on, I tried to collect more and more material together, and we used some of the songs from the original tape, and then I wrote once we decided to make an album. I wrote most of the material after.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I wrote most of the songs of My Aim Is True within a matter of weeks and even days of recording. Like, Less Than Zero was written 3 days before it was recorded, and things like that. So, in fact, a lot of the songs that were on the original tape at Stiff have never been recorded.
So there is then stuff which may appear yet.
Yeah, I've got loads of stuff. I've got at least 50 songs, kind of, which, you know, I regard good enough to someday appear, but I'm just choosing to hold them back at the moment.
None recorded, just are they recorded or not recorded?
There's only one outtake from My Industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be available. It's like we're giving it away in England.
That's it.
It may appear sometime as a B-side or something over here.
Are you comfortable being dubbed as New Wave or punk?
Not at all, no. I don't regard myself as part of that. I think that's all washed up. I think the fact that it's been given a title, the minute you give anything a title, you know, I think it's finished. I mean, we kind of flippantly call what we do alcadelic.
Alcadelic?
That's a cross between psychedelic and alcoholic. But that's, you know, I mean, you can see that we obviously mean that kind of lightheartedly. I think people take the idea of punk and new wave so seriously that it completely kills the point of it.
What is the point of it?
I don't think there is any point. I mean, You know, I mean, that there are some good bands that, have come out of the last year, but it's the ones with the most individuality which are going to survive.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that have made the best music. It's not the bands that copped the style the minute the style was established. They're the ones that have hastened its downfall. In England now, I mean, it's really going through its death throes.
Really?
Really. And it's quite pathetic to come out to America and find, you know, bands of rich punks in LA kind of emulating the Damned, who are washed up in England, you know.
I was there in August, and it seemed to be, you go into the stores, record stores, and the only crowd you see were circled around the new singles releases. And
yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's become a popular thing, but people are beginning to realize that most of the records made under that banner are really rubbish. You know?
What kind of bands do you hold in high regard?
I think the Pistols and the Clash in England, particularly.
How come the Pistols? They're the most notorious.
Well, the Pistols really suffered greatly from bad publicity, particularly in England. I mean, they went on TV and they swore on TV, and they are most notorious in England for that one incident. Up until then, they were only notorious inside the music business. From then on, every little thing that happened to them was on the front page. If one of them got sick in an airport, then it was immediately he got sick over an old lady. You know,
uh-huh.
If one of them got ill at night, he immediately had a drug overdose.
You're saying it was out of their control, really.
After a while, it didn't more or less get out of control. And if they haven't survived that, then it'll be partly the responsibility. I think partly their own responsibility, because they are quite self-destructive. But that was inevitable anyway.
What do you do to protect yourself from all that killer hype?
Well, I just won't talk to anybody, basically. I mean, we've only done one interview in America. One newspaper interview.
Mm-hmm.
I just refused to talk to all the newspapers. After the experience that we had in England, we had a certain amount of... We talked to most of the press when the album first came out. And then it got out of hand, and then we stopped talking to the press in England. Now there are about two journalists in England that I will talk to, because they're intelligent people, and I regard the rest of them as semi-human.
Really, those are pretty, strong feelings.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm serious about it, but in a sense, I don't really care that much. I mean, I'm not serious in a self-serious way. It's all a huge joke, and I think they're rather pathetic in the way that they try to elevate their own, careers at my expense. That's why I want to talk to them.
You're not going to let yourself be...
As it happens, it doesn't really matter, because most of these cheap rip-off rock magazines that they have in America will print stuff about me and as if it's an exclusive interview, when they've cobbled it together from English articles. I mean, we've got there's a piece in Circus this month, and there's a picture in Cream, neither of which were planned by us. They've just been stolen. I mean, it is. They can sue me. I don't care. That's theft.
Okay.
I'm not interested in the publicity in this. I don't need that.
Yeah, it'll come when with you. I mean, it'll follow.
Well, this is why I come on the radio, because if I say something stupid now which demeans myself, then it's my own fault. You know.
I see. Do you think that there's most of these new bands are taking that stance where they're going to...
I don't know them all directly. I think some of them, perhaps, their aggression sometimes doesn't work. It's not channeled properly. Therefore, they just appear to be thrashing around wildly, and people just don't understand it. I mean, I'm quite cold about it, really. I'm not that emotional about them, because I can't be bothered to get that worked up about the kind of people. And I don't like to hark on it too much, because it seems as if I'm rather obsessed with it. It's just that I have to make it clear why we don't talk to the press, you know, and why, you know, we feel that playing is enough, the records playing and coming here to talk a little bit where people can hear directly what I've got to say. I'm not some kind of ogre or something, you know.
Do you run your own business, the band business? Do you have
We work closely with our manager, you know, we're not kind of like controlled.
Are you involved with this album, were you involved with it from, it was done before, right?
I did it while I was still working. In fact, the whole album was recorded in about 24 hours, about 4 6-hour sessions. Then there was mixing time after that.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, the songs were mostly written while we were recording the album. I picked the running order. The sleeve was designed by, you know, a person that was working for Stiff Records and now works, you know, in conjunction with the management company that Nick Lowe and I are both with, which is like a breakaway. We all left Stiff at the same time. And therefore, you know, I suppose it was quite closely tied in, I thought, of the title and things like that, you know. I mean, you know, we do work and we bounce ideas off each other. It's a lot easier than working than being told that your album is going to be called this and here's your album design. You know, we all have a say in it, and that's the best way.
Are you pleased with the way your career is developing now that you've got note in the States?
Well, I'm pleased to be over here, obviously. I mean, that's what we want to do. I mean, there are bands which kind of concentrate totally on England, but it's such a small place. In the end, you exhaust the possibilities of playing over there, and there's so many people over here that we want to play to, you know. That's why we're here.
How long are you in the States for before?
About another 4 or 5 weeks.
And then it's back home?
Yeah, we do an English tour. And then I think we come back and do another American tour after that.
As you're playing basically small places, well, that's not even true. In Portland and Seattle, it's Paramount Theaters, which are 3,000 seats.
Yeah, the first tour we did mainly smallish clubs. We did a tour before Christmas, and we're kind of like, because you get exhausted on doing long tours and it tends to dull you after a while, we made a break over Christmas where we recorded the second album, and we did some of the areas like in a 5 week tour before Christmas. We're in like the second week of a 7 week tour now. We're covering the rest of the areas we didn't cover. And both times we've mainly done small clubs with a few like 3,000 seaters in between. Only on the last tour we were kind of supporting.
What do you play in England? It's basically a club scene over there, isn't it?
Up until now we've done a club scene. Our first tour in England with all clubs, like up to about 500.
Do you have a preference yet?
I don't mind really. I mean, if the sound system is good, I don't mind a big hall. There's more intimacy in a club, but if the sound system is good, then you can achieve it in a large auditorium. I've never played anything. The largest audience we've ever played to is a. We did an open-air gig with Santana in last autumn in London to 12,000 people, which I didn't think was really successful, partly because we were playing across a 30-yard lake, which is kind of like playing across a river or something, you know. But that's the way the gig was set up. It's Crystal Palace, garden or some garden party. It was just a daft gig. Basically, we did it because they asked us, and we asked them such a ludicrous amount of money. We thought they would never have us on the bill, and they said yes, and so we said sure, we'll have that money because we can buy all our equipment with it. We couldn't care less about the gig. It was doomed to begin with. Yeah.
So you have this one question. Oh, let's talk about Saturday Night Live. When you were on it's been about a month. You started I lost the title.
Less than zero,
and then you quit.
Yeah, well, it just didn't seem a very good idea. We'd started it kind of fast, and it didn't really feel as if. Suddenly dawned on me that it didn't really mean that much over here, because it was one of the songs. I try not to write too specifically so that a song can't, people feel kind of left out of it. There are some English writers that write so exclusively about England, it's very difficult for anybody else to make any sense of it or for it to mean anything to them. Same way as we get a little bit fed up with kind of bands coming and doing commercials for California in England, you know. For that matter, you know, I mean, the outlaw movement, you know. And all that, I find that rather boring. I mean, I really like country music, but I find like Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson rather boring, because I can't really get that excited about another song about Texas, you know, because until recently I'd never been there, and I'm sure it's really exciting for the people living in Texas, and it is a splendid place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the songs that I felt just didn't quite fit, and we had this other song, Radio Radio, which is a new song, which I feel fits exactly, because the disappointing thing about the first time we came to America, and I found it to an extent this time, is that there's very few radio stations which have any more idea. The fact that there are more radio stations over here doesn't mean they're any better. In England we don't have very much choice, and it's pretty dreadful.
Yeah.
But over here there's more, and it's less excusable that they're that bad.
That's an interesting way to look at it. But it's
the amount of radio thing would be, they would have a greater chance of achieving excellence. Have a greater chance of achieving mediocrity. You know,
seems to be that levels it out real fast. There are reasons why, of course, but
I'm sure there's a certain amount of politics involved in it, you know, that you can't do certain things and people can't take chances. I know that, I'm aware of that, but it doesn't mean we can't have a go about it, you know, because it's never going to get any better unless somebody
takes
a bit of a shout about it, you know.
So
that's basically what we did. We just played that number because I felt it was like, what better time to go on when you're on there in front of lots of people like that and have a good shout about it.
What was the response back from that?
Well, from NBC, a few of the people on the show, a couple of the people, you know, the...
Producer type?
No, the...
Players?
Performers,
yeah.
As you call them. They thought it was a great thing, because it really was a spontaneous thing. And the fact that Saturday night pretends to be a live program when it's quite planned out, I mean, it's I'm sure most. Yeah, they tape it earlier on to
tape it twice.
Then, yeah, they tape it earlier in the evening in front of one audience, and then get another audience in. And the time in between, they actually change a lot of the script and change the running order around. So more or less, what they do, they find out whether it's funny, and then they run it as a live program. So it's a little bit false. It's still. It's always a shame that the leader in any one thing always gets it in the neck more than the really awful crass programs, both on radio and TV. It's because they try something and go that close and still don't get it right that they become more of a target than really awful programs where you know they're beyond redemption, you know. I mean, the idea of it basically is good, a live program is a good idea, but the fact that they go that close and still get it wrong is more annoying, possibly, than a gong show or something, which is obviously crass, you know. Yeah. And it's even got a sort of morbid attraction because it is so crass.
It's got that spark because it's got that spontaneity, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
What when you sing songs like "One of These Days I'm Going to Pay It Back" or "I'm Not Angry," are those more personal statements than say other songs, like "The Angels Want to Wear My Red Shoes"? Or
no, all the things are personal to an extent. I always try to make them not too personal, because personal songs, I mean, there are albums and albums of personal songs which don't mean anything to anybody else except the singer. And I mean, I try to avoid that always. But you have to put a bit of yourself in it, otherwise you end up the other way, where you're just singing any old blah blah blah, blah. You could be singing a lot of nonsense words and it wouldn't mean anything. Sometimes I get the feeling that records are constructed on the basis of, hey fellas, we've got this good riff, let's play this riff for 10 minutes and I'll just make up some words to sing over it, you know. And I think a lot of Boss Skaggs records are made like that, you know. But you know, and you know, I mean, I don't mean to pick on them.
Those kind of words
are not really about anything, they're just any old cliche strung together kind of to fill out the space. And somebody with a reasonably good voice can carry that off, because the sound of their voice is quite attractive, you know.
The reason I asked is because I'm going to use it. I don't much like to call people by categories either, but a lot of these new wave rock and roll bands, they have this, at least the image from the outside, is that they are these angry young men, you know, real frustrated and depressed, and they take out all the violence on stage at the audience, right? And I was asking about "I'm Not Angry," if that was like a response that you had where you were telling people, "I'm not angry, I'm serious," or something like that.
No, I'm not serious so much. I mean, into the point, you can only be angry for so long. The point of the song is actually when you're probably aware of the feeling that you can get, where you get to the point where you feel that you're so angry that you can't get any angrier. You're almost not angry, you know. You just kind of control of it, you know. And to the point where you just can't be... I think it's getting to the point where you just can't be bothered to be angry anymore, you know. And that's proved itself, actually, to an extent, because a lot of those bands that came up with that really aggressive thing, they wear themselves out so quickly, because they're just thrashing around, you know.
That line that you start, "I used to be disgusted, and now I'm just amused,"
yeah,
is that where you're at?
No, not necessarily. That was the beginning when I wrote it. Or, you know, I mean, I don't subscribe to any one of those ideas all the time. That's the whole point why there's more than one song. If I felt one way, I would have released a single. You know?
I see.
You know, that's why there's 12 tracks on the album, and there's 12 more coming up, you know. I mean, that's the whole point. I'm a human being, not a kind of cardboard cutout that's got one kind of opinion. I can change my mind like anybody else. And that's the mistake I think some singers make, is that they set themselves up like a cardboard thing, and they've got, this is the way I feel, and everybody knows this is how I feel, and so I feel about everything. And they leave themselves nowhere else to go. If I want to change my mind, and record a whole album of romantic songs, you know, like Jack Jones, if I felt that genuinely that's what I wanted to do, then I reserve the right to be able to do it, you know. I'm 23, so I don't remember Buddy Holly, really. I mean, Buddy Holly was like, if I'd had an older sister or something, that she might have had some records, whereas I don't have any older brothers or sisters. I don't really recall those records except really vaguely, or as kind of golden oldies, you know. So the comparison is purely visual, and it's never crossed my mind much.
And it's unintentional, you don't play on it at all?
No, not at all. I mean, as far as I know, Buddy Holly was a lot taller than I am anyway, you know. So, you know, most people think I'm a midget anyway, so.
Someone wants your reaction. Well, first of all, are you aware of Bruce Springsteen?
I've heard of him, yeah.
You want to know, you've been called the Bruce Springsteen of Europe?
I think I've been called the Bruce Springsteen, the Van Morrison, the Southside Johnny, the Graham Parker, the new Bob Dylan, the new Pete Townsend was a new one the other day. I mean, we get a new one every time there's an article, and the list gets a bit longer, you know. I just have to laugh. It's just like lack of imagination again. It's like the record labels don't sign because they can't see any further than the end of their noses, and the papers convey to people because they can't be bothered to think what you really are, you know. So they pick the nearest person they think you sound like, you know. I don't see any comparison with Bruce Springsteen at all.
Yeah, I don't. I don't
know, because I mean he's got a totally different kind of band and
lyrically sometimes possibly, but not.
Well, even
not
there, I mean, I just don't see it. You know, I mean people are quite entitled to it, and if it makes them happy, if that's the reason that they buy the record, then if it makes them happy, then that's their business. I can't dictate why people should like what we do. If they like it because they think it sounds like Bruce Springsteen, that's their business. Mm-hmm. They can like it because they think it sounds like Yes, but I don't see that.
They don't care as long as they like it, right?
Well, you know.
You figure once that you get the record, they'll come to you on your own terms?
Once I get their money, I don't care. No, you know, they don't mind. If they want to like it for a particular reason, that's their business. I mean, that's their right, you know.
You mentioned the money. How in front is that towards what you all do? It's knowing, of course, that it's the back of and behind everything that an artist does, really, you know. You don't release a record for it not to sell.
Of course not. No, I don't have any scruples about making money. I don't want to misuse it, the money that I make. I mean, at the moment, we haven't made any yet. You know, in real terms, we tour and that burns up money. You know, we have to buy stuff and we make records and that takes money. We just kind of, you know, we just earn about as much as I would have earned if I was working day to day. Obviously, if the record sells, then we expect to make money. I want to know why not, you know, we don't get it, you know. Because if you've earned it, then you're entitled to it. It's just a question of what you do with it. If you just go soft in the head from having money, then you deserve whatever fate that leads you to, you know. And that's what's happened to so many people. I just hope it doesn't happen to me, you know.
How many changes have you noticed in yourself or maybe even in the people around you since you've gotten as far as you have so far in the public?
I don't know, not that many, I don't think. I think it was all in there before.
You're basically the same person you were when you were programming computers?
Yeah, it's just that I've got more scope for ruining people's lives now than I did have before.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I can be more obnoxious. I'm paid to be obnoxious now.
Do you play on that?
I was always obnoxious.
Do people expect you to be weird?
People expect me to be more obnoxious than I am, actually, because, I mean, we had this thing where we tied in with the punk thing. They expect me to start spitting and swearing at everybody. But, I mean, you can be much more damaging by fooling people into thinking you're quite normal, and just when they think you're completely normal,
then you get them
doing, yeah, right, yeah.
Getting close to them, and then you right. Stick them, right?
Yeah, right, yeah, you have to get very close to them to stick a knife in them.
That's real true. Let's see, there's another question. Well, I think we kind of covered the four or five that we got there. We can wind this up. I know you have to get a sound check down tonight.
We do indeed, yeah.
And pick your laundry up.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's just a regular life. I go do the laundry.
Walks into the laundromat like everyone else, signs his name, and he's got to go back like everyone else. Any other questions to finish this at all? I don't know what else to say. We'll play another song where...
I just want to know why I haven't got that George Jones record.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if anyone he wanted to hear the Bartender Blues by George Jones, which might give you a little bit of insight to different quirks of his personality. Do you have any particular song off the record, maybe, your record we haven't played yet?
I'm sure I'm trying to remember what song's out there.
Would you like a copy to take with you?
I'll probably think about it.
I should remind people here that there'll be tickets at the door. Elvis is playing at the Lane County
angry.
Civic Center.
I'm not angry.
Not angry, okay. He's playing Lane County Civic Center tonight. Showtime, 8 o'clock. The Hots play, and Elvis comes on probably around 9-ish, but there will be tickets at the door. If for whatever reason you cannot go, shut in or whatever, we'll have it on the radio, too.
Oh, I didn't realize you had that.
Do you want to? Sure.
Sometimes.
Play right now.
Oh, great. Come on, that great.
We have,
I'll be like, yeah. Do something.
The other side.
You want to hear the other side?
This one?
Yeah. Can tell it to me prompts you for it.
Well, it's live.
It makes all the difference.
Listen to this.